Have you done any other interviews today? Or
no.
Is this the only one you're going to do?
I think so.
Yeah.
Exclusive. Speaking exclusive.
Strange. That's. But you, I mean, you used to be a bigger name. You know? Anyway, people used to notice you more than they do now.
Yeah.
Perhaps because you're a bit more inaccessible to the normal.
Yeah.
Mr. Smith, I don't know.
Yeah.
You've returned now with 3 EPs in a row. Yeah. Clank Stereo and Shunt EP. And before that, you did a remix of Natasha Atlas and a remix of William Orbit.
Yeah.
Did you do anything else in between?
Yeah, we did quite a lot of remixes, basically between the time Gorilla went bust. We started doing a few before then, but between that time and the time that we started doing Clank, the only thing we could really do was remixes.
And live
gigs and things. So we did Chapter House and Lush and did a couple of things for Gorilla just before they went down.
The dub album?
Yeah, we did.
Some other people did mixes of us, wasn't it?
Yeah. The Gorilla and Dub thing.
We did the Chameleon Project Feel.
Joe Bogart, we did.
Joe Bogart.
I had all these things, I just forgotten them.
Yeah, me too, yeah. we did that. Track with Billy Ray Martin, Persuasion.
Yeah, sure, that was a classic.
And it's a shame it didn't.
I mean, people noticed it, and I have a DJ friend who was very much into that, and he's also into Goa trance and everything, so he likes the emotions in it.
Yeah, it's a good track. I mean, she's a fantastic singer.
Yeah, what do you think of her now?
A lot of the stuff she's doing now was what she wanted to do then. But we weren't really into the sort of pop angle that she was coming from.
Okay.
We wanted to do something. I mean, her voice to me has got far more of an edge to it, and it's far more sinister than what she's doing now.
She's a bit wasted on what she's doing now.
Yeah.
Even with BT?
No, I haven't heard that.
I haven't heard that.
No.
No.
I mean he's done the whole production and...
He did the production.
Right.
Well, no.
I still find it a bit poppy.
Yeah.
It's a bit too clean, and I think she needs like a powerful sound behind her because she's got such a fantastic voice. And,
yeah, she does.
But that was good. I'm pleased that we did that, and we just did a few other remixes, a few indie things, a few dance things, and I think that was the period that our sound evolved from Gargantuan to what we're doing now.
Yeah, how would you describe that transgression from? You had something like a housey, trancey sound. Now you're much more concrete, playing around with sounds in much more rhythmically.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's to do with the equipment that we had and just the circumstances that we were making the music. I mean, the first album we did in my bedroom, pretty much on fairly minimal equipment, and we were still sort of high on the club scene, and it was very new to us. The whole process of making a record that way was still exciting, whereas now that seems normal, and I think we started looking elsewhere for interesting things
we
to do.
We did a hell of a lot of it as well, using the same sounds and making the music in the same kind of way, and I think we needed to have a bit of a change to get kind of re-excited about it again. More than anything else.
Okay, so how would you describe your sound now?
I think it's very difficult to describe it in a sentence, if you know what I mean.
Especially your own sound. That's more up to other people. It's up to journalists, really.
But it's definitely becoming more organic, I think, and less synthetic.
Okay.
And even when I'm programming synthesizers, I don't want it to sound like a synthesizer, if you know what I mean. I want it to sound more like almost like an acoustic sound, like a natural sound.
Why don't go for the real thing, then?
Well, we did a lot on this new album that we've done. We've sampled a lot of sounds that you hear every day and tried to use them in a musical way. So, and combine that with sort of synthesizer sounds. But I wanted to get away from the sort of big analog sort of wash sounds that is everywhere at the moment.
German Euro.
Yeah, and I think the equipment has become so normal for people who make electronic records now. They all tend to have the same equipment, and I like to fight against that a bit and perhaps do something a bit stranger with it.
Okay, so fuck around with the presets and just see
what happens.
Wherever you go,
make a slightly harder sound. I mean, the German records, although people say, oh, that's hard music, it's not. The sounds used aren't that hard. They're very clean and
no dirt in it at all.
Yeah, it's not industrial to me. It's like all the waste and the grime and all the kind of
you could say old German music, like Duff and
German music, I mean the sort of Euro trance, yeah.
Paul van Dyk and Jackie Paul and everything from MFS.
IQ Records and all that.
IQ. Yeah. Although Harthouse have.
Yeah.
They've become better now.
Yeah, definitely. They've been putting some good stuff out.
I like this stuff. It's good.
Yeah. Do you DJ as well?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Okay. I play quite a few Harthouse records as well. Yeah.
Okay. Where do you DJ?
Well, because we've been recording, I haven't been doing so much recently, but. Before we started working on the last album, all over the place, lots of different, just one-offs really, no regular things. I don't want to do it as a kind of regular job. It's just nice to go out twice, three times a month and go and do stuff. You know, I've DJed abroad, I've DJed in Germany and in France, and done some kind of things up in Manchester at Hacienda and clubs in London and parties. I just like doing it for fun more than anything else. So.
Well, I mean, if it's a job, then take the fun out of it.
Exactly, yeah.
But how? What kind of bookings do you get? What kind of other people are playing in? What kind of music do you play in?
Well, the sort of music I'm most into, sort of old school acid tracks, a lot of that stuff, a lot of DJX, early DJX stuff, sort of Detroit, funky techno, really. But I also do, play kind of a lot of chill out sets, a lot of ambient stuff, sort of experimental electronic stuff,
Great.
Mixed with lots of older stuff as well, Eno, maybe some of this Mortal Coil, a bit of everything really.
That's good.
It's important, I think, to.
Yeah. It's good for our profile as well, because to be seen to be doing that, other things other than just
It's very easy to sit in a studio all the time and perceive music as coming from your studio only. When you go to a club, the same record can sound completely different.
Like whenever you step into the Ministry and the huge sound system they got there.
You can just hear the bass. Bass in the top.
Sounds like a different record. It's good to hear that, get that different perspective.
Sounds
sometimes.
Like in a box.
It's good.
How do you work together in the studio? Do you do most of the programming or?
Charlie does most of the writing of the music.
The way we work is very much rather than both of us flying the plane, if you know what I mean. I tend to fly the plane, but Duncan tells me where to go in a sort of, because it's very easy when you're working and pushing buttons
and you're
looking
at the computer.
You get so close to it,
I help him.
It's good to get, you get too close to it sometimes, and it's good to have that objective perspective on it. So I mean, I can be playing away and with an idea or whatever, and the obvious thing to do isn't always apparent.
No.
So it's nice to have. Duncan will say, he'll be listening to it somewhere else in the house or whatever, and he'll hear a bit that it should be made more of, or he'll hear a way of changing it slightly. So it works quite well that way, I think.
Okay.
I think if we were both in there writing stuff together the whole time, we'd be, I don't think we'd be fighting over it, but I think it'd be, we'd just get kind of lost in there, I think, especially if you have your own studio and you have too much time on your hands.
I was taught music academically when I was going through school and everything, and sometimes that's a hindrance. Sometimes it's good not to know anything about music, and it's good to just hear it for what it really is, if you know what I mean. It's good not to know what you're doing sometimes.
But on the other hand, it's when you don't know anything, you might reach that limit where your lack of musicality.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think so, but there's always... for me, I'm interested in sounds, a huge amount interested in sounds, but also the music. I love sitting down at a piano and playing it, after a while, the two areas start to move together. So you start to hear the music within sounds. So like one sound, I don't know, whatever, we've been hitting sort of radiators and things at home, and
a lot of
you start to hear music within that sound
that
suggests other sounds or other music, and it's like a big adventure. You're exploring a world.
There's music in every sound. But do you think? How many other people do you think are hearing that music within those sounds? Does it take something? Do you have to have heard something before?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it takes repetition for one. You do have to hear it a few times. A lot of recent, like on the Shunt EP, for instance, on Shunt, a lot of people heard it and they went, "Oh, what's that sound?" It's like a cacophony of noises, and it's really hard. And then, like a week later, they'd ring you back and go, "Oh, look, I can actually really hear the music."
Yeah, it's really catchy,
there.
You know.
It's like there's a tune in there. It's not what I normally call a tune, but there's melody in there.
But it was fairly obvious to us, you know, straight away when we hear those sounds. You know?
Yeah, I think which is
because you're so much into it, and
I've heard it so many times in the studio.
But you know, even when the parts are first kind of coming up, you know, it kind of seems a logical thing to us, but to a lot of other people it seems very alien at first.
Yeah.
But maybe that's a good thing, because maybe we're doing something a bit different, I don't know.
I listen to a lot of Indonesian music and Far Eastern music, which use different scales, different tunings from what we're used to in the West.
Where do you get that? Do you hear it?
I just buy CDs of it. I studied a bit at college, and to me that sounds very musical, almost as much as Western music does now. So I like to incorporate those sort of atonal sounds and detunings and things, which is I find that a very interesting area to sort of get into, which I think to the Western ear at first is like, I can't hear the music in that. But you listen to it for a bit and you pay a bit of attention to it and it makes sense. I think for the last album that we just done, that was definitely one of the things we sort of explored a bit, was atonal sounds and different ways of putting music together and different scales, different tunings.
Well, I mean, on the three EPs there are a total of 12 tunes.
Yeah,
that doesn't make an album for you.
No, one of those is on the album.
One of the
tracks, but we are going to compile those three EPs onto a CD. Okay.
That will be an album later on next year because they're all deleted now. The CDs are burnt.
Okay.
Shunt, Clank and Stereo are all finished now. When they sell out the shops, that's it.
But the album we've done since then is all new material.
What's the difference between the EPs and the CD?
The EPs and the new album?
Yeah.
It's a similar sound.
It's just progressed on a bit. It's much more of a listening record. I think the EPs are quite indie, sort of. It's quite an indie sound to it. Some of them are quite hard.
Yeah.
Whereas the album is something you'd put on at home and listen to it a bit more. There's a couple of tracks that you could play out. We're remixing a few of them.
Yeah,
doing sort of more club mixes of them, but
you're doing the remixes yourself, or?
Yeah, and other people are doing some as well.
You can tell me any name.
Dave Angel's doing one.
Yeah, he's popular now. I mean, in the remix business anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
Mouse on Mars are going to do one, hopefully. I mean, they're very busy. Spoke to them yesterday, but Link, Reload, Communications, Mark and Tom. Maybe later on in the year, after they've done the next global album, maybe something.
What do you think about the Jedi Knights album?
I haven't heard it.
I like that.
It's brilliant.
I got it very recently, actually. I mean, I had the single beforehand, the one on Clear. Which is brilliant. It's great to me. It sounds like the band that play in Jabba the Hutt's restaurant in the film in Star Wars.
But the music in the film is very up to date.
It's really ahead of its time, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if that was in '83, music was from '89.
It'd be quite fun to remix that track, actually.
Yeah, speak to George Lucas about that.
Because
when it came out, you listen to that and you think, whoa, this is like sort of space music or something.
Yeah.
Now, it's sort of normal. I'd love to hear that album. I haven't had the chance to hear the Jedi Knights stuff yet.
You'll probably get it anyway. Do you live nearby them, or where do you live?
We live in London, but we actually come from
where they come from.
Dorset,
we didn't know them.
Southwest.
Okay.
So they live about their studio is about 6 miles from where our parents live. So.
Okay.
But we didn't know them when we were young. We know them now. It's weird.
How old are you?
27.
And you?
27.
That's about the same as Tom and Mark, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, didn't you Didn't you understand that we're a couple of musical nerds around?
No, not at all.
Like we went to school. We went to boarding school as well, at the other end of the county.
Okay.
So I mean, from the age of 8 onwards, we weren't really at home. That's kind of
okay. But that's funny and some.
Yeah, it's cool.
Strange.
And Aphex Twin comes from the West Country as well.
Yeah,
and
Cornwall.
Yeah.
It's same as
Ragnar Christ.
Yeah, Luke Vibert. He's a maniac, isn't he? I mean, musically.
I've not met him.
I haven't met him.
What do you think about his records? Have you?
I've heard some really good stuff. I wasn't too keen on his album, the most recent one. For me, for my personal taste, I think it's very clever, but for my personal taste.
You mean Throbbing Pouch?
I don't know which one it was. I heard it. It was. I listened to it about 3-4 months ago. It was just a little bit jazzy for my taste. I felt. But I thought Psylob mix he did of Ventolin EP,
yeah.
Richard James, it's just brilliant. I really like that.
Yeah.
Same as the Ruby remix he did.
I haven't heard Paraffin. That yet.
Oh, yeah, we should check that out. That really fucked with my head.
Yeah,
I don't know what it does.
I'll give the album another listen, but it was very jazzy, I thought. Almost like kind of acid jazz in places, some of it. And it's not my personal taste anyway. But.
No. Have you been asked to do some collaborations with other artists, and not duets, so to speak, but just collaborations?
Not for a while.
Not recently.
When we remixed Chapter House, we didn't have time to, but we were asked to actually produce some stuff for them, but the band fell apart, unfortunately. But no, we've been asked to do some stuff for film recently, though, some experimental avant-garde movies.
Okay.
It's kind of a sort of touring film thing that's going to be going around the UK. We've just been asked to choose any avant-garde movie of our choice and do a soundtrack to it, basically.
Okay.
Which is quite exciting. And we're also, we really want to get into that side of things. We're getting a 20-minute film, which is going to be a sort of compact version of Found Sound, the new album. We're going to make sort of edit 20 minutes of that, you know, our favourite bits of it, or the bits that we think will work best with visuals. It should be available on like CD Plus, so you have the album and then 20 minutes of visuals as well, with a small kind of capsule version of the album at the end of it.
Brilliant.
I don't know if you've seen any of our recent videos. I don't know if you saw Shunt or Stereo.
I haven't seen any of your videos.
I've been working with this guy, Grant G.
Okay.
He's very, very, he's brilliant. Really, very experimental. A lot of stuff on. It's all film, no computer animation. It's all Super 8, 16mm.
Oh. Lots of animation and
time lapse. Lots of animation, time lapse, single frame, really experimental stuff.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's good. I think it's an area that we're interested in.
Yeah, well, I think, especially with our music as well, I think it's really. You know, and our live performance, it is going to be the future of what we do. We are going to be like an audio-visual experience, hopefully.
Yeah, it'd be nice to incorporate film.
We just need some investment from the record company.
Please.
I'll send a debt to them.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry, they know about it.
They know about it. We don't shut up about it. So.
Now, how did you land this record deal, anyway? Is Generic your label?
Yeah. And we've got plans for Generic in the future, but there's a lot. We've got a lot of time. I don't want to rush with it now. We might, hopefully next year we'll get round to putting some other people's stuff out. Mm. But
I mean, we are signed to A&M as Spooky, but they've allowed us to have this Generic sort of umbrella that we hide behind, if you like.
Yeah.
So we still got independent distribution in the UK. And they've given us a hell of a lot of freedom, really, to produce the music we want and to sign the bands that we want to Generic eventually. So they've been very good. It's a new thing for them. We're the only electronic band on their roster. So
yeah, well, they've been very conservative in the past.
Yeah,
but so they have a new team who are really good. A new head of marketing, a new managing director, a new head of production. And it's a really happening label now, and they bought Mo Wax, and they're getting. I think of all the majors in England, they're the most kind of forward thinking.
Well, that's where the money is now. But do you think? Do you find? You have a nice contract, but there are many people who are still striving, and just want to make music, and there's been a release now of just attention, and people are daring to put some money into projects.
Sure.
But still, the corporates won't get in until they see that there's money in it.
Yeah.
And the idealism in the record business, it isn't always there.
No, there's so much sort of history weighing it down, if you know what I mean. There's like the conventional method for making and selling records is out of date now. You can't do to us what you did to the Beatles or the Who. It doesn't work like that anymore. You can't sell our records on the radio. You have to look for an alternative marketing means, and you have to realise that it costs nothing for us to make a record, but then you might have to invest more money in things like our film, for instance, or
Back to the Film.
Yeah, Back to the Film. Or that, you know what I mean, that sort of thing, which is as important to us as radio play, that we can have something like that, which is perhaps a little different, but that's the way we're going to sell records eventually. We're not going to be on the daytime radio pop stations.
Unless the daytime radio changes
dramatically.
Dramatically.
I don't think daytime radio knows what it's doing in England, actually. I think they're really confused.
Yeah, they're very confused.
They don't know where
There are a few London stations who are doing it proper, aren't there?
There's a few. There's specialist shows.
Not Kiss FM, definitely. Though.
Not Kiss FM.
No, anymore.
That's more pop than Radio 1 now.
It's terrible.
Very cheesy, sort of handbag. And
I mean,
they have specialist shows at night which play good stuff.
Colin Dale and Coldcut and things like that. But you have to stay up till 2 or 3 in the morning if you want to listen to them.
Or tape it.
Yeah. But, you know.
But I think the radio thing is they're in a bit of a mess. They don't know what to do. They're losing listeners. And, I mean, they are starting to play more techno, but it's like the stuff they're playing now is the sort of stuff we were doing when we were on Gorilla.
It's like old progressive house.
And they think it's really cool, And they'll play that next to like a Green Day single or something, and they never say
bizarre.
They never have any sort of opinion about any record other than it's wicked. This is brilliant. Everything's brilliant. It's not like a,
even if it's crap.
even if it's terrible, and it's not like it's not intelligently worked out at all. It's just sort of bubblegum for the masses. It's chewing gum for your ears, if you like. They play the odd really good track, but it's swamped by so much rubbish and a bad attitude from the radio station. I think. I hope they never hear this, but because we still rely on them to play our records.
Yeah, well, you haven't made any radio edits, and
no,
so
not yet.
You don't feel dependent of having radio play because you have a name anyway that people, people will know that there's a new spooky record out.
Sure,
we do have a fan base which is kind of slowly expanding again. I think.
Yeah.
I hope.
It's like second time round, really.
But for us, gigs are the way that we're going to build on what we do, and it's been received very well so far this year with our new set, or the most recent set, and then hopefully we can go one stage further with the film and start really making our gigs an exciting thing to come and watch. And I think that's going to be our strong our strength, really. It's just, in a way, that's quite weird because it's going back to the traditional way of bands going out on the road to build up their fan base, indie bands. So in a way there's still a lot of similarities to that,
but for a techno band, playing live is one of the main ways to lift yourself out of the sort of techno masses, if you like. There's so many records out there and so many people making records that one of the only ways to sort of stand up and be counted is to play live, and then people notice you.
What do you do live compared to what you do in the studio?
We basically have a mini version of the studio on the stage, so we still use sequencers, but there's far more interplay between us and what's happening moment to moment. So the sequence is like a track will run around in a big loop, all the parts, and we'll bring stuff in and out and build a structure out of that.
Just a live mix, basically.
It's like a live mix,
live remix perhaps.
It still allows plenty of interplay between us and the music. We can dub it up and mix it around a bit. And obviously, the more we learn about that, the better we get at it, and the more sort of improvisation we can get into it. I think once we involve sort of visual elements as well, it'll be a really good show.
Yeah, because it's all about getting this total experience.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And it's something that we've sort of found, sort of we got back into it again after. I mean, with Gorilla we did a few gigs and we were very much sort of new to the whole thing there, and it was quite nerve-wracking and we were like a bit frightened about it. But yeah, now we've got a bit more confidence and we realise that it's a very important thing to do in terms of just meeting people who buy your records and meeting people who
and just getting
doing things like this,
you know, as well, yeah,
going abroad and doing it in other countries where, you know, London's a very it's not prejudiced, it's very spoilt for choice. You've got so much going on there in terms of music and things to do, but people are a bit blasé about it. They're a bit sort of, oh well, yeah, that was okay, you know, whatever. But when
it's
you play
an underworld gig.
When you play, go to somewhere like here or anywhere in Europe or out of London, people are far more receptive to what you're doing and they're much more loyal.
Yeah, well, we don't have any choice. Yeah.
Sure, exactly. You have to make the most of it, which means in turn that we think, oh, it's great, you know, that was really good, and it makes us do a better gig, and you know, the whole thing is a good, positive feeling, I think. So it's important not to stay in the studio all the time because you'll, you know,
stagnate.
Yeah, you can become very cynical about, you know, if you sit in the studio reading press about you, it's not healthy.
So, well, that's because the press, they're a part of it.
So they're part of the machine, and in England, especially,
you have to see it for yourself. And
people are much more independently thinking outside London, I think, and outside England. The press have a very strong hold on people's opinions in the UK. If they say a band is brilliant, people buy their records. They don't make up their own minds as much as they do
other places
of the water. Yeah.
No. Well, I mean, Norway is kind of funny because we have people like Mental Overdrive.
Yeah.
And Geir Jensen, Biosphere.
Yeah.
And also East Mystic and Bill Canto, and I mean, but they're all from the northern part of Norway.
Right.
Which is very strange because all of them come from one city.
Really?
Or about one city, which is very strange, you know, because in Britain you have people coming from all over the place.
Yeah.
But the whole techno elite in Norway comes from one small city.
Really? Is there something in the water supply there?
I don't know. It may have something to do with Northern Lights.
Yeah.
Or something.
Dark
it's
winters.
Very arctic, and the feel in their music is very cold.
Right. Yeah.
Yet organic. Did you get the Unplugged? No, the Plugged album from Mental Overdrive.
No, I didn't hear that. I have an East Mystic record though on DJX from about 1992, which is brilliant. I really like that.
Yeah, he'll be playing tonight,
right,
as you know.
One of his records I really like. It's really cool.
He's a very nice fellow. He lives in a small house outside Bergen, which is one of the other big cities.
Yeah.
With his wife, and he makes music.
Yeah.
And she
very purist techno.
Yeah, very purist. Yeah, well, that's the way he lives as well.
Yeah,
he's a vegetarian,
nice.
And
right.
Yeah. So it's all reflective in the
right.
way.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Because whenever we come to this part of the world, we always go, well, "What are we doing living in London?" You know, it's like a war zone compared with here. You know,
it's so well looked after.
Yeah, everywhere's clean and people are polite.
Well, we've never been here before, but we've been to Denmark and we're treated very similarly.
You haven't got the density of population here.
No.
Well, we're
kind of lucky still.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But it's not such a fab place to live, really. It's there's not so much happening, as you say.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's I shouldn't be saying this to you, but the people who have booked you, Sound Productions, or they're working with Yadi and Firman, the other company.
Yeah.
And they've sort of got the whole techno scene here in grip.
Right.
They're
the
biggest and
techno
almost
mafia.
A techno mafia, you might say, and they're not very receptive to. They used to be idealists, but now they can make a lot of money from this every year.
Yeah.
And they actually try to get much. Yeah. I mean, very big acts like Orbital and Underworld.
Yeah.
Well, but the Quart Festival got them, because the Underworlds, they've done the Quart Festival was before, in 1994.
Yeah.
And and they're so professional and so polite and so kind to the press and everything.
Yeah.
Mm. Compared to what Sony's like.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's not a very revolution. No, it's not moving places.
Yeah.
It's very stagnated
here.
Yeah.
Which will kill it eventually if they're not careful.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it'll all go down in one huge mess, and then something new will rise and shine. I hope. There's a Nashville tonight or after party.
Yeah.
Right.
Which you might want to come over there. A friend of mine's having it.
All right.
Well, he used to be a big fan of you.
Right.
I don't think he heard your latest. I don't know.
Right. Right.
But so he's having the one from Coxbox, Frank E. And three Swedish DJs. It's going to be very Goa, very trancy.
Right, right.
Probably not your. Not your preference. I don't know, but it's going to be very vibrating. I hope.
Yeah. Oh, good.
But, I mean, he used to be into you, so.
Right.
Well, you might hate us now, because some people who used to be into us don't like us now. But
do you really care whether people.
No, not really. I mean, you can't, because you make the records you want to make. You don't make the record you think you want to make.
Yeah.
You always make the record you want to make. So whatever people's opinion on that is, it's important, but it's not that important. You can't let it affect what you do. You have to be happy with what you've done. You have to like it yourself.
Mm.
You know.
Or else you wouldn't have
done
it.
There's no point in doing it.
Yeah, there's no point in doing it, because if you don't like it, and someone else does like it, that's the most embarrassing situation you can get into. It really is, because you just feel awkward about it.
Do you think they like them because they don't know? They're not ignorant, but they don't know why you made it, or they.
Possibly, and I think when we did Gargantuan and all that gorilla stuff.
Don't listen to the mic.
Sorry, when we did all that gorilla, all the records we made with Gorilla were part of a scene that was flourishing at the time. It was. We knew when we did our first record with Gorilla, it was guaranteed to sell 4,000 copies or something, because it was on Gorilla.
Yeah.
And we were part of a big wave of new music. And I think people who are into that scene, into that progressive scene, are possibly a bit disappointed now that we've not
changed our style
completely. Because we're not. I mean, Left Field have sort of stayed true to their ideals, I think, and stayed true to.
Yeah.
You know, which I think is really commendable. But for me, I can't make the same record twice. You know, I have to move on. And there was a 2-year gap between doing the Gorilla stuff and the new stuff. And in that time, we heard so much new music by different people.
Discovered,
and
you know, a lot
discovered
of
things.
A lot of music that we'd missed.
Yeah,
stuff
and we built our own studio and started experimenting in that. And you know, discovered what we wanted to hear really, and what the next record was.
And got pretty bored of all the stuff that was kind of sounding like. What we were making, there was so much of a progressive.
You think people were picking up on you and
not on us,
specifically on the whole sound,
yeah,
the sound, and the Left Field sound, and what Orbital were doing that time. Everyone, you know, it's
definitely, and
we can make this too. Just
I think it's important for us. It's important to kind of do something maybe always a bit different from what we can buy in the shop. It's nice to make a record that you can't buy, and a record that you make for yourself.
Mm.
You know, sometimes it turns out good, sometimes it turns out bad, but you know, when you do something that you feel is different, that you couldn't buy in the shop and that you like, then it's a good feeling. So you know, that's the sort of philosophy by which we work, really.
Mm. Well, you might say that the music scene is changing nowadays. Now, I mean, the sound is much more important than the tone or the scale.
Yeah.
Definitely.
How do you think music will change now that people are used to hearing sounds instead of tunes?
Yeah, it's just really interesting.
That's
because I remember when people first started making albums of dance music, and it was like, oh, these records are 7 minutes long, and you know, everyone's used to hearing, like, radio define the length of records for so long to be 3 minutes. And then suddenly DJs were playing 7-minute mixes.
Mm.
And so suddenly you could make an album with tracks that were 7 or 8 minutes long, and people got used to it, and that's accepted now totally. And I think in terms of the sound idea is
people, yeah, they like sounds, but often they like the music with contained within that sound. You know, a sound is it carries an emotional weight with it, or it can almost trigger a memory, or it definitely has a mental, it's like a little trigger, isn't it? It has a mental sort of counterpart in your brain.
That means something to you.
That means something to you. And for me, the nicest effect is when you get that sort of sound worked in a musical way that has also an emotional effect, or a, you know, an uplifting effect.
Which means different things to different people.
Yeah, obviously. But it's nice. I mean, we've never been into using lyrics really, and vocals and lyrics in tracks.
We've always been into sound. And kind of.
Because I think it's far more effective.
Incorporated in that sound.
You know, music can get across a whole idea in a second. Mm. You know, that would take you 10 minutes to explain in words, and even then you wouldn't get the feeling of it. You know, it's a powerful medium, and I think that the way the shift to people listening to sounds now is a healthy thing. I think it's a sign that people are evolving, maybe, and mentally you're kind of growing up a bit, and you know, you're not. There's so much music being made now that sounds very old to me now, even though it's just been made recently. I'm talking about a lot of rock music. Even though some of that is good, you know, there's some really good bands out there.
There's a lot of people around that kind of, well, we won't mention any names, but there's a few that sound like the Beatles, and then there's a couple of bands that sound like the Who, and where's it going to go next? We're going to get the next generation of Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and Yes, and then, you know, it's a recycling process, you know.
Yeah, whereas I think with one thing techno has got going for it is it's the first generation of musicians to have so much music or sound making power at its fingertips instantly, ever in history.
Anything's possible.
It's totally possible. You can do anything in your bedroom, and I think that's something that, you know, we certainly try and remember that when we're working, and that, you know, look, we can do anything we want in here. We can make some incredible sounds if we want. Let's not just get the 303 out and bass drum going. Let's try and do something a bit different, maybe. It's it's an opportunity not to be missed, I think. So
we're spoiled.
Yeah, I think we are spoiled, but you're only spoiled if you don't appreciate what you've got. You know, you can have everything in the world, and as long as you appreciate it, you're not spoiled. But if you've got everything in the world at your fingertips and you abuse it, or you don't pay respect to that, then I think you're being spoiled.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with this new tools of making music, that are so easy to get, just get a hold of a little bank loan and you have your own studio.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, that'll obviously change the way music is made and is charted as well.
Yeah.
Mm. And, I mean, you can see any top 10 now without the rock. It isn't. I mean, you have 7 or 8 techno-made tunes.
Yeah.
In it, which is. But do you think that's good, or do you think that's just digest? I mean, because some people will always be mainstream and commercial, whatever you play to them.
Yeah.
Do you think that is good that they just get this little slice of life, or techno life? I mean, should it be underground?
If the underground wasn't underground, it wouldn't be underground.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, it's...
It's always the case, there's always kind of an experimental idea, and then that idea, kind of people think, oh wow, that's new, and like a few other people start trying to do that, and then slowly that will filter from like an underground buzz, which will start, and then that will get bigger and bigger, and then suddenly some of the money people will come along and go, we can make this into an acceptable kind of package and make money out of it. So I think that, I don't know if it's a bad thing. I think to us it's a bit irrelevant, really. It's really, really good to see acts like Orbital and The Prodigy, though, having hit records without compromising what they do, really.
I think that's with really good tunes.
With good tunes. I think that's really important
for
what we're doing. It's
sort of staking out the way and then you can
possibly
maybe people will actually hear about you as well.
Absolutely,
because I mean this rave tonight is gathering 7,000 or 8,000 people, and a lot of them will not have heard any techno music, real techno music before, because they come from different places of the country.
Right.
Well, that's brilliant. I mean, that's
exactly the sort of thing
we
want to
do.
I think in England now there's so much music, techno music, and on the radio as well. Like, like I was saying, the top 40 is there's a lot of tunes in there which were underground sort of 3 or 4 years ago. And you don't seem to have that situation here at all. It's still like a new thing. I remember when we played in Denmark last, there was you were playing to people who hadn't heard live techno before, or and that's a really good situation to be in, because it's not like they're losing their innocence, it's like they're perhaps gaining a bit of knowledge without in its purest sense, if you know what I mean. They haven't had the sort of pollution from the radio and the mass market. I mean, especially notice this in Germany, where there's so much more money put into techno and electronic music,
entire industry,
and it's become very formularized. It's a lot of the records are the same, and I think that's the money has killed it in a certain way. Whereas in England, we still have a big underground scene which feeds the mainstream, albeit a few years later. And it's important to have that underground sort of excitement. You seem to have that over here as well, when people are getting into it for the first time. And they think, I want to do this, I want to do this. So they get their bank loan and they get their, and off they go, you know. And that's the feeling you've got to try and sort of hang on to for the rest of your career. And that's what we try and do, is try and keep the excitement that we had when we first started doing it, and keep reminding yourself that it's a luxury to do this job, and it is incredibly exciting. And
yeah, I mean, you're really lucky, plus
absolutely, and there's not a day
you're
that
not
goes
forgetting that.
Not at all. You know, and there's not a day goes by when you don't, even if it's a really shit day and everything's going wrong, you still think, I wouldn't be doing anything else. So
what would you have been doing if you hadn't been making music?
I've no idea.
I don't know.
I haven't thought about it. I haven't had to think about it, which is good, but
probably, I don't know, some hideous kind of financial job or something. That was probably what was expected of me, definitely, because of the background I come from, and like what my dad did, and what I was kind of, you know, go to university and get a job in the city kind of thing.
And they're not mad at you now for doing this?
No, not at all.
Do your parents like your records?
No, but
my dad does, actually. Yeah, he pretends to, or he tries to like it, and my mum too as well. My parents are very cool about it.
There was one year about a couple of years ago when I actually earned more money than my dad, and that really pissed him off. And since then, he's actually been really respects what I do now. No, they are pleased. They're really proud of what I do. I mean, because I had to really fight for it going through school and everything. I knew what I wanted to do, but we both went to boarding school, and where it's heavily academic, and you know, you don't really do anything else.
That's one way that you're going to live, you know.
Yeah, you're
shut off from the rest of the world, and
And what we did was
a bit of a shock.
We did the opposite of what we should have done. So,
but if it all fails, what are you going to do?
It won't fail.
It won't fail
because
we'll just carry on doing it anyway.
We've been through enough years of having absolutely no money and still being able to do it, so I could go back to that. Even if I had to take 2 years and sit in a hut in India or something, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, that wouldn't be so bad.
But, you know, it's a good time to be alive, definitely.
Yeah.
It's an exciting time to be making music. Really exciting.
A lot of people think, a lot of people in the business live for the music and live off the music, but it's still just music, isn't it? Mm. Do you think there's so many other aspects to life than just music?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but music can sum up all those aspects.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean, like you can, any human feeling that you can have, there's a musical equivalent of it. Mm. You know, and that's what I like about it. You know, it's the fact that you can communicate a whole feeling that millions of people share in a few minutes of music. It's
I see what you're saying. That it does become an obsession for people who are into music, and that's everything.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot else to life.
But I mean, it's good to, like, we went away recently for a couple of weeks holiday where there was no music, and it's good to get that distance from it and appreciate what you've got, and also appreciate what other people have in their lives. And
you think you might be becoming too detached after a while to just hang around with people from the business and just talking about music, and suddenly you can't relate to normal Mr. Fellow in the street?
Does happen if you've been in the studio for too long.
Yeah.
You
can't relate to anyone.
No. You can't go down to the shops, you know, without kind of, God, this is really scary. But
I think that was possibly more... I think that was more of a problem a couple of years ago, I think, when we were doing it when we were on Gorilla, and it's like we'd just go into a studio for kind of, you know, 4 days, and we'd be up all night and kind of, you know, doing everything to keep ourselves awake, and, you know. I think we've got it down to a T, really, the way that we kind of, you know, we've got the studio and we can, you know, get away from it when we want, and we've got...
It's a 9-to-4 job.
We're not that disciplined.
It's 11 yet. To about 7, really.
I think that was more of a problem, but there's, you know, it's good to have a life as well. It's important.
You know, I mean, that in the end, you get a lot of ideas from that.
It's important to spend as much time not doing the music as doing it, because then that time you're not doing it inspires whatever you know, or even though you're not kind of, you know, it doesn't kind of, you're not consciously inspired by things, you don't think, oh, that's really inspiring me, just going away and doing something else will just fuel you to do, you know, to put more into it, and then come back and, you know, seeing something else, and it's important. But there was a time definitely when it was kind of, you know.
But if you go away for 2 weeks or something and you come back and, like, you walk into the studio and you think, oh yeah, the studio, and you suddenly realise what it means to you, and, you know, what you can do in here and how important it is, that's a good feeling to have, which you're not going to get if you sit in there all day.
No.
You know, you have to get out and stop it. You've just got to stop it sometime. Do something else. Yeah.